What are you?
What am I?
Who are you? It's a flavor in a muffin.
I think for me, my go-to muffin is a triple chocolate. But since we've already mentioned chocolate, I'll go with salted caramel.
Nice.
Because when my players outthink me, I can be a salty bitch.
Hello, and welcome to Lore Makers, the show where we showcase the storytellers, the creators, and the world builders. I am your host, Scarlet Song, she, her. You're a local librarian, and today we'll be traversing the tabletop and opening the book and delving into the backstory of today's amazing dungeon master. Who are you, Lore Weaver?
Hello, I am Patch from Quest Junkies UK. He, him, and very happy to be here.
So, what kind of lore do you weave?
What kind of lore do I weave? That is an interesting question. I run a homebrew campaign that I have made three attempts now to get from start to finish. And we're currently on probably the best performing one yet, and we're only six sessions in.
Yay! So, three attempts. What were the other attempts like?
So, campaign one started out in the pandemic.
Ah, yes.
As a way of me and some of my friends just to hang out, really, more than anything. And funnily enough, actually, not a very well-known fact, that campaign one of the Radahni Chronicles started off as a dare.
Ooh, why?
So the idea behind it was that we were talking about doing some Dungeons & Dragons, and one of my players said, I dare you to run a one-shot. And me being cocky,
oh no,
forgetting the fact that I knew nothing about D&D or how to run it, and I'd only played it maybe twice before and didn't know what I was doing then, I said, not only will I run a one-shot, I'll stream it on YouTube and then we'll turn it into a campaign maybe if people enjoy it. And that's what happened.
So since the start of the pandemic then?
Yeah, so we started off about maybe 3 months into lockdown here in the UK.
Oh, yeah.
So summer 2020, I think. It's been forever since then. At least it feels that way. So campaign one ran for, I want to say just short of a year. I'm not 100% on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that came to an end. Campaign two started up a little while later and only did 12 weeks, but it was very action-packed, and by that point I'd actually figured out how to DM. I had been playing over on the Phoenix Iwaki channel, which taught me a heck of a lot.
Yeah, Phoenix is an amazing DM.
He is. He's my favorite DM in the entire world. He really is.
He makes me feel like I'm tucked in bed, honestly, hearing his story. He's got that vibe.
He really does.
Love you, Phoenix, if you're listening.
Love you! And then, unfortunately, that campaign had to come to an end, just mainly due to time constraints and people moving around and schedules changing.
Yeah.
My plan, hopefully, is at some point just to do maybe a one-shot, just to be able to finish off that story.
Yeah.
Because we got to tell some really interesting stories and they didn't get the ending. There's no worse feeling, certainly in my experience as a DM, in putting a load of effort into a story and getting so close to the climax and then it just stopping.
Yeah, because I've known you for a while now. One of the things that I remember watching Radahni, I only could watch the VODs or I could only pop in every now and then because time zones, which is the bane of everyone's existence.
Time zones. My sworn enemy.
But I remember being around for like a whole bunch of really fun fights and some very warm-hearted, fairly epic scenes. When you told me that you had to finish it, I remember being devastated for you because Radahni in many ways is your baby.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Right. So for those who don't know what Radahni is and have been listening to us ramble for the last little bit, can you give us a quick rundown? What is Dungeons & Dragons to you and what is Radahni?
So Dungeons & Dragons is, for me, a new way to be a storyteller. So all my life, I've been that kind of creative where I'm always telling stories. For the most part, right up until the pandemic, it was as a professional musician. So I told my stories through song. I'm a real life bard who has never played a bard, which again is fascinating.
Frustrating.
Yeah, a little bit.
Frustrating for me to hear and know.
Yeah, if only I knew a place where bards congregated in a TTRPG sort of setting. If only.
There's a college of inspiration around. Anyway, sorry, continue.
So when the pandemic came, my music career pretty much came to a halt. Mm. And Dungeons & Dragons was sort of what I fell into. And then it's now become my prime creative focus in life. Mm. Certainly more in recent times, as we're now sort of finally building that community that I've been wanting to for so long.
Yeah. So I'm going to quickly bring in a question from the Q&A, which is happening later. So Myrid has asked 4 questions.
Of course.
But I'm pulling one in early. What inspired you to start playing and DMing? Does it have anything to do with that t-shirt you're wearing, sir?
Yeah, if you were to look at my wardrobe, you would absolutely think that it was entirely Critical Role, which, yes, I'm a big fan of, and...
It's pretty stuff, though.
Oh, it really is. I wish I had their merch designer. I mean, we have some pretty good merch, but their merch is just magnificent. But yeah, Critical Role was my first introduction to what a professional style game of Dungeons & Dragons looks like. I wouldn't say it's my favourite, but it had a lot to do with getting me more interested. The main inspiration for me was Phoenix Iwaki.
Yay!
Again, bringing up the best DM in the world.
So, how did you discover Phoenix DMing?
Purely by accident one day. I was browsing through Twitch.
This seems to be a habit for you.
Yep.
That's how we met.
Yep, now that I think about it, yeah, a lot of the defining moments in my life and career have been accident-related.
Sometimes fate picks its moments.
Absolutely. So yeah, I was just looking for D&D channels one day on Twitch, and it was recommending this channel called Phoenix Iwaki, and there were about maybe 9 people watching.
Mm.
So I thought, okay, let's have a look. And it was a Rime of the Frost Maiden game. And I jumped into the chat and straight away was greeted by Phoenix.
Mm.
And the players were chatting as well. And by the end of it, I got invited into the Discord and had, over the course of the next couple of weeks, had loads of conversations with Phoenix about his games, all the stuff that he does, and then guested on that campaign.
Nice. You definitely have had some really fun characters on Phoenix's games, from all the stories I hear. This is not a diss, by the way, everyone. I think it's very important as a GM or a dungeon master in general to kind of understand what it is to be many characters, because that's kind of your role when you're a dungeon master, because you're all the NPCs.
You're literally the entire world.
Yeah. You're the world, you're the way it's woven, you're every craggled rock, every mountainous lore drop, everything. If you haven't had a chance to be a player in a while, it's very easy to get stuck in being a forever DM. It's really important to have chances to be a character.
Absolutely.
But anyway, let's get back a little bit more to the Rodania end. What made Rodania happen? What kind of hit you and went, this is the world I want to create? Because there's a whole bunch of D&D worlds out there. Some of it works of the original creator, and some of it just kind of mushes of all stuff. And everything is kind of homebrewed of this basic fantasy, right? What makes Rodania for you?
So when I first started designing Rodania, at first, because it was only meant to be a one-shot, it was just designing one place, a little town, which then turned into capital C.
Right.
And because I cannot do anything other than hyper-focus when I'm in creative mode,
yep,
it very quickly, over the period of maybe 2 hours, went from being a village to a continent with a name and a map and landmarks, NPCs, literally within a few hours.
Nice.
It was all done because I just started and I couldn't stop because ideas were coming left, right, left, right, left, right. And that was it. Before I'd even knew it, it was all done.
That's really cool. So when you world build, obviously you draw from the published Dungeons & Dragons elements. Have you only done 5th edition, or are there other games you've played?
So I've only done 5th edition
as
a DM, certainly. I've played Savage Worlds once, which is something that I would like to run at some stage.
That sounds cool.
I also, whilst looking up at my collection of TTRPGs that I have yet to play, there are several that I intend to get to at some point.
Cough.
And they're staring at me right now. They're looking at me now on my bookcase with these longing eyes. Please play us, sir. Please play us. We will be bountiful with story. Pretty please.
We would be ever so good. So I've got experience with some apocalypse-based systems. I want to run the Avatar The Last Airbender TTRPG that came out recently.
Ooh.
I also want to play in a feng shui game, but that's only because feng shui sounds like 1,000% my vibe. It's like action movies from the 80s, sort of ridiculous levels. And I love me my martial arts fix because my dad's a martial arts teacher. Or was when he used to do it. Mm. So I grew up with that ambiance. And my mom was a massive, massive fan of all of that stuff growing up. She's like, I remember when Jackie Chan was hot.
I've recently picked up a TTRPG that I'd never even heard of before. Mm. And it's from Japan. It's called Ryutama.
Yes, no, I have the PDF.
Do you? I've got the hardback copy.
I wanted to get it, but Australia's stupidly expensive, guys.
Mm.
So we have import taxes out the wazoo. A wizard's book in America is like 35, 40?
Roundabout, yeah.
It's like 60 to 70 to 80 bucks in Australia.
Jeez.
It's rough being a GM here. So the Ryutama books are really interesting to me, and I would love to play or run this because you're a dragon!
Hell yeah.
Making worlds! That's so crazy! And then my favorite part about it is that it's chill.
It's super chill.
It's like, hey, you know your Stardew Valleys? That's Ryutama to some degree. Also, the goblins are cats, and that kills me.
Yeah. I mean, the original reason why I got it was because I read up about it, and at the time, my girlfriend told me that she really wanted to get into D&D and playing tabletop role-playing games.
Right.
But she didn't know the first thing about it.
Right.
So originally what happened is I let her read my copy of the Player's Handbook, which she almost read cover to cover in a night.
Okay.
And I was like, no, you don't have to read that much. That's a lot. So I got Ryutama because I thought that would be a good introduction. And then before I knew it, she's off playing on Phoenix Iwaki's channel as well. Kind of got beat to it.
I am not my friend's group's first GM by any means. I'm very lucky to be surrounded by GMs.
Mm.
So my favorite part about this is I don't actually have to remember the rules.
This is why I always have a forever DM in anything that I'm running.
Right, because somebody else can handle that rule lawyering for me, especially if they're more the kind too, because I'm definitely more of the RP manipulating the situation. Like, you've been my player for me on the Kingdom of the Crystal Quaddle, right?
That's the one.
Yep. You will understand everyone at that table was a DM. And all of them were just DMs who wanted to play. And I'm like, ah, yes. Come. What you don't know is that I have fooled you. I haven't actually, but thanks for handling, understanding the knowledge of your own stuff so I don't have to and I can just be the world.
Yeah. It's like being a dungeon master on easy mode.
Honestly, kind of. Sorry, we were talking about Redania and I got... Continue.
I mean, to be fair, I do that in Redania sessions, so don't worry about it.
Well, what's one of your favorite moments where that's happened?
God, that's a question. I think most of the time it just tends to happen when I'm doing my introductions. So like I have a list on my desk,
right,
which is like, don't forget to say this, don't forget to say that.
Right.
And I get 3/4 of the way through it, then end up on a tangent about something. In fact, it happened in the last session that we did.
Oh yeah.
I'm doing my introductions and I go off talking about something else and then the players riff off that. And then I realized I looked at the stream timer is like, you've been live for 35 minutes and you haven't started yet.
So let's talk about your players and how they affect Redania's world building. With Redania, you've got this fairly now 3 seasons worth of multiple people, multiple backstory influences in your world building. You mentioned you had a 2-hour session of just, oh, hyper focus, here we go, we're world building. But how much of that was your players' input?
So across the 3 campaigns, I've had varied, varied amounts of backstory contributions from players. There's some like Feronia in our most recent campaign, whose backstory was, I woke up in a forest one day. I couldn't remember how I got there, but I had these weird gloves on and I had a book.
Mm-hmm. I like that. That's a present, that is.
It really is. And I got more out of that than I did from some of the other players who give like pages and pages of stuff, which was all incredible and fit perfectly within the world.
Mm.
But The fun thing that I did just on this subject for the current campaign, in between campaign 2 and campaign 3, there was an event in the world called the Great Reconvergent.
Right.
And what that essentially was, it's not so much spoilers, it has been covered in the campaign.
It was in the intro episode for sure.
It was, yeah. So the Great Reconvergence was an event where people and places from different realms were switching with other realms. So places showed up in Radania that had not been there before, and people.
Right.
And out of all the characters in this current campaign, only one of them is native to Radania.
That's kind of rad.
It is.
I love that.
Because that provides even more flexibility with backstory, because it's like, okay, so the way to build this backstory is no longer limited by the setting.
Right.
Because they don't come from here.
Right.
So you can go a whole new avenues that you would have never been able to do before.
Nice.
So that's been really, really exciting.
Would you say that when you're designing a storyline, that you're fairly free flow with your characters being in inserted. So for example, I'm about to run a variant on Spelljammer because I personally believe that you can be respectful to the setting if you want to be, or you choose to be inspired by it. I'm the latter. But I'm trying to keep as free form as possible. I haven't started writing any of the major plots until I get all of my characters' backstories because I want to go shove, 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 shove. But for you, Rodani has been around for 3 seasons, so there's a lot of stuff that has been established. Do you feel it easy or difficult to kind of go, meh, you're here?
Well, up to this point, I've not really struggled to fit anything in.
Oh, that's good.
I mean, a lot of that's down to the fact that I've been very blessed with the players that I have had over these 3 campaigns.
Mm.
Absolutely incredible players who are just as creative, if not more creative than myself.
Mm.
And they come in with this beautiful stuff. And I think pretty much every time my initial reaction has been, that's perfect. I know just what to do with that.
Yes.
So I think I've been very lucky in that sense.
Yes, it does make a good plot when a character and a player is willing to be flexible. And a DM, honestly. Weaving your characters into the story, do you believe that you had to be very flexible, or do you believe that the players have just gone and inserted themselves?
I mean, I know for a fact that as a DM, I am very sort of laid back and flexible.
Right.
It's probably the most common feedback I've had from players, because I literally am the DM that will be like, oh, you want to do that? That sounds cool. Let's do that. And I think the reason that that's my approach is, the way I see it, this is their story as much as it is mine.
Oh yeah, no, for sure.
I might have made the world, but they're the ones living in it.
Mm.
So what they want to do is more important. And finding the way to thread that into my plans and the story at large, it can be a challenge. But again, if you're blessed with wonderful players like I am, it's, as George Lucas would say, it's like poetry, it rhymes.
So have you ever found a time where you had to not force your players into a particular mode or anything, but you have had to railroad without necessarily meaning to because the plot needs it? Or do you kind of still flow even if the plot is being thrown out the window, over the sea, towards lands far away?
So one thing that I always tell my players, and I'm probably a bit cocky saying it every time, but I always say, my number one goal for you as my players is to outsmart me.
That is cocky.
To railroad me. Bring your best, because you'll get it back tenfold. And they do. I mean, I think the only time I've had to really sort of railroad, in a sense, was in this most recent campaign during the journey on the skyship that they've just finished.
Be honest with me, how many sessions was that actually supposed to be?
It was supposed to be 2 sessions, or 1.5. I think 2.5 sessions was about 3 hours in-game time. But yeah, because it got to the point where I said to the players, if it's okay with you, in this session, we're just going to jump cut the rest of the journey. Because I know they were keen to get on, but also when you're in the moment, it's so easy to just go off script because it's a very chaotic group. I mean, you've watched some of it.
Yeah, I just got past the siren part, so that was fun.
That is the perfect example, yeah. I think that was the session where they were supposed to finish the journey and then the quest begins.
Right. The prologue is here. Wild magic search.
Yeah, that's what happens with wild magic. It is the ultimate derailer. So why do I keep encouraging it, I wonder?
Because it's chaos.
It is.
Again, bringing up the Kingdom of the Crystal Quaddle game. I just wanted random effects to happen. I figured that wild magic storms had been around the area, so everything was still kind of natively imbued with it. For context, guys, I ran an Indiana Jonesy, Lara Crofty mummy.
Definitely the mummy.
I love how I basically had the cast of the mummy. Everyone was like, hey, here's my character. They're basically from the mummy. And I'm like, I see we are all from the same generation. But one of the things that the first set of creatures, I had these crystalline beasts that were basically invisible, and they hunted by emitting essentially a sound that evoked an emotion. And if you failed your wisdom save, you had to produce a noise because they hunted via noise. But one of the wonderful things about them was that if you struck them, they were basically imbued with wild magic. So if you struck them, a wild magic surge happened. But not like the traditional table. Multiple tables, which I have written. Everyone who knows me as a GM knows that I love my tables. Mm-hmm. Not to roll on, but just to have, hey, here's a list of options. Find out. But you got grass on your arms? It replaced all of your arm hair, I think, on the arm that you punched it with?
That's right, yep. And I was very happy about it. The thing that I love the most about that one shot and playing that character,
yep,
is something that I've talked about with my players recently as well, is my plan for Mordecai.
Yep.
So he's a Sato Way of Mercy monk. And my idea was he wanted to be a healer. He couldn't graduate cleric school or something. So he just tried to punch people better. And one day it worked for him. That was my original plan. The session started and I think I had my first like interaction with an NPC. And my inner thought process just switched. And I said to myself, what if he was a guy that just wanted to hug everybody?
And proceed to break their backs. Because we have fan art of that.
That's what it brings me on to this. It's one of my favorite things about character creation and then beginning a new campaign is that you never finish your character until you start playing your character.
Mm.
Because you don't find out who your character is until you're RPing them. So in the current Rodania campaign, one of our characters, Reese, is Tabaxi Bard.
The Snow Leopard, right?
That's right, yeah. And Wyatt, the wonderful player who plays him at the Moonkeep, had this plan for this character that it was going to be a certain way.
Mm.
And I think quite a respectable character. And then two sessions in, we'd finish the session and we're having like the post-stream chat offline. And Wyatt's just like, man, Reese is a bitch.
I do think your party definitely brings that out in you, though. The right party comp will bring out a different vibe.
Absolutely. But I've tried to take inspiration just from that whole thing into when I'm prepping for a session now. So I've actively pushed myself to write less notes.
Yes.
And to just go with the flow.
Three goblins in a trench coat.
Yeah, but also just trusting that I'll be able to improvise and adapt to whatever they throw at me, even as chaotic as they are. Perfect example, I ended up introducing an NPC off the top of my head in the latest session, which I think the first reaction from the players was, oh no, this guy's incredibly creepy. And then, no kidding, 30 seconds later, he's the favorite NPC and the players now want to adopt him.
Yes. Do you feel like that all of your Spore of the Moment characters, your current favorites, have just come from ideas, or have they kind of come from that conglomeration of you and your players' interest?
I think because they're sort of born in the moment, I'd say that the players are as much of a part of putting them together as a NPC as I am, mainly just bouncing off their reactions.
And that's a big part of GMing, right? As one to another, playing off your players is so much, and improv is so much. Do you ever feel like improv is your main skill, or do you feel like your main skill is something else as a GM?
I think improv is absolutely my main skill in that sense. Mm. Kind of related to that, the reason why I always run homebrew stuff, and only one occasion have run something in a predetermined setting.
I was part of that.
Which we'll get to in a bit.
Who's running this podcast, me or you? You guys didn't see this. Patch just gave me the sassiest look.
Hashtag co-host.
Yo, our time zones don't line up most of the time. Oh,
I know, if only. But yes, so I guess confession time. pre-established settings and source books terrify me.
That is fair.
The idea of running something that's already written by someone else, it really, I don't vibe with it at all. I'm comfortable coming up with stuff out of nowhere and laboring all my time and energy into world building. So like in Rodania, the level that I go to, I have a Google Doc and it has every location in Rodania.
Right.
Every landmark, every village, every town. And there's a little thing for every week. And I force myself after every session to write one thing in for each place, each destination.
Okay.
About what's happened during that session, even if it's going to have no significance. So like, for example, in campaign two, there was a session and I remember this one because I was telling my players about it at the time. A place on the other side of the continent that they were probably never going to go to elected a new mayor. It has no significance, but it forces me to constantly keep making decisions about the entire world. And one of the main bits of feedback I've had is that the thing that people love about Rodania as a players is that it feels like a living, breathing world. And that's why I push that approach so much.
Yeah, I agree. One of the things that I did very recently is I ran a level 21 shot for my brother that was Kung Fu Panda themed.
Amazing.
I know, right? But essentially what happened was I sent them into the spirit world because their Master Oogway, which was an old Master Grand Turtle called Guai, because we're going for parody here, regularly astrally projects themselves and they weren't returning to their mortal body. But one of the things that I did with that was they had to go down to hell, or like the death realms in this case. And I took a lot of inspiration from Chinese mythology. But one of the things that I also did was I had a Lord Enma, which I don't know if you've ever seen. Dragon Ball definitely has had an episode with this. But Lord Enma is like the judge that you line up in front of. And if you've played Hades.
Oh, yeah.
Hades at that giant thing where he's like, next.
Yep.
Yeah, it was very much that vibe when they entered the spirit world. But one of the things that I did to make this place feel more alive, they enter the place and then you've got all of these people who are essentially bureaucrats running around providing information scrolls on the people coming through. And they're going, wait, what do you mean you sent them to reincarnation? They were supposed to go to eternal peace, you idiot! Like happening in the background, because it is important to make your worlds feel so much more alive. And I think that's just easier done in homebrew, right? Because you're not having to work within someone else's established canon. But you do have experience with that. I mean, we did that one shot.
Yeah, I mean, probably the only reason I was able to do that particular one shot, context for our lovely, lovely listeners, I did a one shot called The Depths of Darktoe, which was set in Matt Mercer's world of Exandria, specifically the island of Darktoe.
A pirate island.
And yes, a certain squawky bird was present.
Hilarity!
But the main reason why I was comfortable doing that one was because, so I think when the group in campaign two visited Darktoe, they were there two episodes. They explored the very south of the island briefly and then left.
For reasons.
For very specific reasons. But the whole of the rest of the island was unexplored. And if I recall, there isn't even an official map. So I made a map.
Right.
So it felt more like homebrew, even though it technically wasn't.
Right.
But because it hasn't been officially done,
right,
there was a lot of wriggle room, shall we say.
No, that's the best way to describe it, actually. It felt like homebrew. Like, it felt like, oh, we're dipping into this world. And the main things are we have a member of the Cobalt Soul, right?
Yeah.
In the party that was played by the amazing, the wonderful Avivor.
Yes.
Who also was the character artist for your Rodania Campaign 3 portraits, which I adore.
They are so good. I will never stop ranting and raving about them.
I love your portrait. I was just like, oh, galaxy eyes. That makes sense for a GM.
So I have a thing about galaxy eyes. I've used them extensively in various iterations.
I mean, it makes sense for a GM. Like, you're weaving worlds. You literally see space within your eyes.
Yeah. It's just an aesthetic that's always appealed to me.
Why do you think that is?
I'm not sure. I don't know. I just like space. Space is cool.
I'm honestly continuously very surprised at how many people I know just like space, like my boyfriend is that, just space.
I wasn't even intending on getting one for me done. I was writing the email with the details of what the commission was, and I was just looking at my planned stream overlay, and I was like, it's going to look weird if I don't have one. I guess I can get one as well. And I put in my little description for me, eyes like the astral sea.
Nice.
And that's what we got. And it's, yeah, beautiful.
I love those portraits. They're so pretty. A link to those are already in many graphics, but I will link another. Do you like mixing sci-fi and fantasy?
It's something I would love to do, but the right opportunity hasn't presented itself. Maybe it will do in time. I'm kind of waiting for that right moment to bring something like this in.
So what kind of tropes do you really enjoy in your world building? Do you enjoy making your players feel not necessarily insignificant, that's the wrong word, but you've mentioned lots of moving parts. Do you like making things feel alien to your players?
I'd say I do, yeah. I mean, you know, based on the fact that most of them have picked characters that are essentially alien to this world, and the only one that hasn't really ventured much out of their home city. So the rest of the world, in a sense, does feel quite alien.
Right.
And then going from that to then visiting a place that is from yet another world.
Mm-hmm. So there's lots of things you can kind of touch on then.
Yes.
Are you ready for some questions from mainly your players, Patch?
I am always ready for my players.
Don't lie. No one's ever ready for their players. If you would like to submit a question for an upcoming individual appearing on the podcast, please consider following the Twitter account at MakersLore, because Lore Makers was taken, or joining the Discord, which will be linked in the show notes below. The first in the list of many, many questions comes from Patrick McCallion at PatToons. Can we get a full-length backstory for Cheesy Feet? And how long are you looking to run this? Is this a level 3 to 20 campaign, or do you have an endpoint in mind?
Okay. In regards to the first question, I could answer that now. Or you could just find out. He doesn't like to reveal his secrets.
Secrets!
And in regards to the second question, I haven't got an end to the campaign set in stone just yet. I'm hoping it goes on for a long time. If I had to ballpark a figure, I'd be happy if we went for at least 12 months. So I'm in it for the long run.
Nice.
What I basically said to the group is, I will do this until you stop enjoying it.
Right.
And I hope that's never, but we'll see.
12 months is good. I tend to have endings, I suppose, for my games, just because I like knowing where I'm going. But like having that end goal, at least for me, makes it easier to run as a GM, because it always feels like there's something I can push them towards.
Yeah. I mean, there is an overarching story plan, which could facilitate as a good ending, but I'm not planning for it to be the finite ending.
Right. That makes sense. Definitely, like, it's very easy to fall into trope structure plots as well, because I know that one of my favorite ones is collect the MacGuffins.
Yeah.
It's just, there's so many things you can do with the MacGuffins, guys. It's just a MacGuffin. The MacGuffin can be a muffin for all you care.
I mean, that would be very popular on my channel.
Yeah. What flavour muffin do you like?
Oh, my go-to is triple chocolate. So that's white chocolate, milk chocolate, dark chocolate.
Decadent. I'm a fruits person, so if I can get myself like an apple crumble or like a berry white chocolate mix, so good.
I mean, I specifically, for one of the session zeros that I did for this current campaign, I made a muffin table for players to roll on, because they've...
I have noticed that muffins are a vibe. Like, you have muffin time t-shirts now. You have...
We do.
You have, like, a lot of muffin ambiance. Why muffins?
It was a plot point from session one. So in the session zero, two of the players had been to this bakery and acquired some muffins. And they'd had some of them, but they had some left over. So when session one began, one of the characters stole the last muffin, and it became like a point of contention from them both. This was when Reese found out that his character was more of a bitch than he had originally planned it to be. And it just kept coming back. But the other reason is I'd set up a TikTok for Quest Junkies, and I'd started posting clips. And I put that clip up, and within 6 hours, it had 700 views.
Wow.
And it was like the most successful thing I'd ever had on TikTok. Mm. And people were like obsessed with it. Mainly just the quote from Mai, who plays Feronia, just slamming her hands down on the table going, "It's muffin time!" I mean, it's not established in the story in canonical terms, but at the moment, the party is called the Muffin Men.
I love that.
It might end up being official, but we don't know just yet. They're still trying to figure it out. But if they want to pick it, it would be great, because I'm just imagining like they're in some regal ceremony and there's a bespoke lord who's like, "Yes, and to who do we owe the pleasure of saving our quaint home?" And it's just like, "The Muffin Man." He's like, "I'm sorry."
I love that. Oh, that's brilliant. Every inch of that is just screaming amazing to me. I love that so much.
Yeah.
That's actually a great question, though. I have ways, essentially, for the players to give their party a name, right? For my bard campaign, I'm like, "I need a name for your band." When I ran Waterdeep Dragon Heist, though, there's a part where you have to write your group's name on a contract and you have to write your party's name, essentially. So do you think it's important that parties have names?
So the first two Radani campaigns, there was no party name. The first campaign, they didn't want one.
Mm.
And the second one, they couldn't think of one. And then it ended before the right opportunity came up to really put one together. So like this time round, after, I think it was session one or session two.
Right.
Offline, when we were chatting, they sort of said, "Oh, we could be the Muffin Men."
I love that.
I was like, "Oh, okay, this might happen soon." So I'm just waiting for it to happen, waiting for the right moment.
I think it's reflective, though, no diss to your previous campaigns, but I do think it's very reflective of how, well, seemingly into the moment your group are, that they have themselves essentially a club name.
Pretty much.
That's how I always see the party name. The party name is either a club name or it's a way for them to kind of identify themselves as a group.
Yeah,
I do think it's like very reflective of your players that has been generated, because I'm not going to deny this. You are constantly beaming when you are running campaign 3 of Rodania. You're like, or you're making big wide, like, "I didn't plan that, but you know what? Okay, cinematic stuff. Let's go. Let's have some fun."
It goes back to what I said, like, my number one goal for my players was to outthink me, outsmart me, and make me sit back and go, "Well, shit, okay, this got interesting."
I mean, that's definitely how I feel about with what happened with Polarity, because I walked in with Polarity being a joke, and then Polarity ended up predicting absolutely everything in that session, and that was terrifying.
Ladies and gentlemen listening at home, if Polarity ever shows up in your world, my advice is to run, because Polarity is some sort of elder being, god. I'm not even sure what. I mean,
she's a parrot Arakocra raised by Kenku that was supposed to be a joke.
And ended up, like, predicting the outcome of the entire one shot, whilst also predicted my Chisenta's Tyranny campaign awakening sentience in her spellbook.
Oh, yeah. That was fun, yeah. Did not know that till it happened.
Yeah, because I remember messaging you excitedly going, "Polarity strikes again!"
And I'm like, "What do you mean Polarity strikes again?" So some more context. So the pirate one-shot that Patch ran, Polarity was this bird. She was an Arakocra raised by Kenku. She was like a bright red macaw with a black feather cloak who is, backstory reasons, is two parts rogue, three parts divination wizard. Yeah. Essentially. And Polarity's thing was that she had a set of tarot cards and she had fortune cookies, because I really love the idea of divination wizards actually divining stuff.
Yeah, it's cool.
And then Polarity kept doing stuff. So at the very start of the game, and not too many spoilers, Polarity gave the captain of a ship a feather, just like, "Here, it'll be lucky." And it was.
It was.
In a devastating, like, terrifying kind of way, because a feather is a very important spell component for a certain type of spell, which I will not say. But I didn't expect that. And then Polarity kept on saying tarot card names for things that were accurate. And then fortune cookie predictions. Like, I remember with GTG Vicky's character, whose name is eluding me right now.
Ligoria,
that's right. Ligoria, that Polarity gave Ligoria a fortune cookie. And inside there was like this really beautiful moment where Ligoria had something predicted that I had no idea about. I went into this one shot being like, "I'm going to be a kooky little bird."
Boy, that escalated quickly.
Oh, boy, did that escalate quickly. The entire time, I'm like, why am I getting this right?
Yep.
What's going on?
I was thinking the same.
And at the end, I'm like, were you doing stuff? It's like, no, I wasn't doing anything.
Like, I'm scared.
I'm scared. We're both scared. The other thing, so with Patch's character, who do you play on Phoenix Owaki's Chisentis?
So I play the sassy yet classy Order of Scribes wizard, Kellen Sturgrove.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that happened pre you arriving was Phoenix was doing one of the many wonderful charity events that Phoenix does. And everyone in the party essentially got magic items. And I wanted to make sure that the party, like, you got a magic item. And I didn't say what I wanted to give. And Phoenix was like, oh, I will give them a bag of holding because that's a useful item for that you can give a low-level party that isn't OP as all hell. And then he asks, oh, do you want to give it a prediction for polarity, I think? And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to make something up. And then it became relevant again.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the thing about Order of Scribes wizards is that when you reach a certain level, they grant sentience to their spellbook. And we do a fun thing in the campaign where we actually do it as an NPC, which is not part of the rules as written, but we do it as a fun RP thing. And
it's fun.
The fortune from polarity, I don't remember the specific words, I don't have it on me, but it essentially talked about life within the words of pages and things like that.
The prediction said, be like paper, for even paper can fly far and wide, written with the words of true feelings.
And Kaelin had given her book True Feelings, and it now floats above her hand whenever it comes out and says hello. And I was just thinking about it, and I was like, wait a minute. And then, like, I think it was like 2 a.m. for me or something, and I'm frantically messaging you like, it's happened again! And this is months after the one shot.
Yes. Terrifying. Fun, but terrifying.
Yeah.
All right. I have four questions from Myrit the Pirate. You've already answered one. What inspired you to start playing and DMing? So here are the other three. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Who was your first D&D character? Will there be more to Brim's tragic backstory? How has he become the precious small boy? And more importantly, can I keep him? Which is technically a whole bunch of questions, so there's like seven questions. And finally, when are you starting your own D&D podcast?
Okay, interesting questions. So my first D&D character, going way back before Quest Junkies, I played a few sessions with some friends because they were already in like a pre-established campaign, and they said to me and my best friend, oh, do you want to come and join us for a few sessions? It's a bit of fun. And we were like, well, we don't really know what we're doing, but okay. It's a fun chance to hang out. So I made this character having no idea how to make a character, but it was an elven ranger called Iago Anwamane, who had this 8-page tragic backstory. Like, I couldn't play D&D. I didn't know the rules, but I could write a backstory. So like 8 pages, tragic backstory. He's 1500 years old. He's the last of his race.
Oh, wow.
All his people have been died out in some...
Baby's first edgelord.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Like totally. And I had, you know, my plan was he was going to be really like depressed and brooding. And what happened at the end of those couple of sessions when we weren't able to continue playing is our characters decided to go to a brothel and never came back.
Damn.
So that was a bit of a plot twist. But again, you don't know what your character's going to be until you play them.
It's true. It's true. The other questions were, will there be more to Brim's tragic backstory? How has he become such a precious small boy? And more importantly, can I keep him?
So, yes, Brim, everyone's favourite brand new NPC. Brim's backstory is one of tragedy and also harmonious joy. But again, I could talk about it here or we could find out in the session.
Mm-hmm.
And in regards to whether or not you can keep him, I have made a character sheet, so I am prepared if you kidnap Brim. I mean, it might not be kidnapping. He might enjoy it. I don't know. I suppose you'll have to find out.
And don't forget, everything has a consequence. Da, da, da.
Curiosity brings consequence.
It's so good, though. Because this has happened multiple times where one of my players is like, can we have a pet? And then essentially has adopted a creature as a pet. And I'm like, all right. Checks notes. The mama bear is nearby. Go for it. So be careful about who you adopt.
Absolutely.
And when are you starting your own D&D podcast?
So this is something I've thought about for a while, actually. It's difficult because it's something I'd really love to do, but I don't have your hosting skills, so to speak.
Oh, lies.
No. I mean it. Like, as a DM, I'm pretty comfortable now. But, like, doing what you're doing kind of terrifies me a little bit.
Really?
It does.
This is coming from the stage performer? Really?
Well, yeah. It's strange, but it's true. However, by the time this airs, so while you are currently listening to this at home right now, we will have actually announced the return of something we've only done once before, but as a semi-regularly event on Question Keys, which is Lore Junkies.
Oh, yay!
The current plan is every 8 weeks or so, we're going to, instead of doing a session, we're going to do a session where we sit back and we chat about the last 8 sessions and just do it as like a...
You know, you should call it Muffin Time, right?
Oh, that's a really good name.
No. It's Lore Junkies, semicolon, Muffin Break.
Muffin Break.
You're welcome.
See, this is why you're my friend. There'll be memes, laughs, and probably a lot of jazz.
Jazz is good stuff. The next question comes from Wyatt Larson at The Moon Keep. What inspired the creation of the world of Verdania?
So there were many things, and I think a lot of them I didn't even consider at the time, but have discovered since. So, like, at the moment, the campaign that we're currently playing through has a lot of Feywild theme to it. And it's only in recent times that I realize 90% of it is Studio Ghibli inspired.
It's good stuff.
I mean, which is not surprising for me because I absolutely adore Studio Ghibli.
Which one's your favorite?
Princess Mononoke.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Without a shadow of a doubt. I even have little Kodama on my desk.
That's so cute.
And I even put them in my campaign because I have yes. to. They're forest spirits.
Actually, there's a creature that's come out with Spelljammer that I cannot remember the name of, but they're very much Kodama.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh,
yeah.
I'll link you to it later. But one of the teachers I used to work with in Japan, super nerd, wore an Ashitaka hood to their wedding. And their wife wore like the fur cloak.
Oh my God.
For Mononoke Hime. And like they both were wearing the outfit. It was amazing. I was looking at the wedding photos and I'm like, I love you so much, sensei. One of the things that I think I'm seeing more of as I write is definitely influences from the type of theming in Ghibli films, right?
Yeah.
Ghibli films. Things like that fight between nature and the mechanic. Like, I see that now that you've said it in Rodania. There is this amalgamation of different entities and how do they conflict and how do they continue nature versus created. But how can they coexist? Like, I definitely see elements of that in Rodania now that you've said that.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's in regards to Princess Mononoke, there may be more little influences popping up in the future.
Oh, hell.
Maybe
yes.
Even the near future.
Ooh, that makes me so excited. I love that. All right. Are you ready for some D20 questions?
I certainly am.
So for those who have never come to the channel, welcome to D20 Questions. I have a multitude, but don't tell Patch, of tables of 20 questions. And our interviewee will roll upon these tables with a 20-sided die. A nat 20 can garner some interesting results. In our last session, Magic rolled a natural 20 as our first roll and had to give me lore in 1 minute. So that was fun. So let's find out what you roll.
Okay, first roll
da-da-da-da.
Is a 5.
5, okay. On your desk, what can't you create without?
What can't I create without? Well, the first thing that I see when I'm looking around at my desk is a very unhealthy amount of snacks. So probably that.
Any particular favorites?
Let's have a look. There is custard creams, which are particularly good, especially with a cup of tea.
What kind of tea do you like?
Oh, good old-fashioned Yorkshire tea. There is none better.
I was very surprised to find out just how much caffeine was in Yorkshire tea. For those who don't know, I really like my tea. But I have been drinking mostly herbal recently because I need to cut the amount of caffeine injected into these blood vents. Anyway, my friend gave me a box of Yorkshire tea when she was studying in Leeds and sent me back a little care package from, like, look at the stuff. This is what I'm drinking. I don't need coffee. I'm vibrating. But Yorkshire tea is actually surprisingly...
Leeds is just around the corner from me.
Really?
Yeah.
So that means one of my closest friends was studying at the Leeds University.
Amazing. That's where I went.
What?
It's a small world.
This world is so small world. Da 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 da. As for me, I definitely can't write without a hot drink on my desk. I have a variety of favorite mugs. The Otter mug's probably a favorite of a lot of people. And then I focus best with lo-fi / study with me.
Yeah.
Have you seen any study with me videos with Pomodoros kind of built in?
I have, well, you just made me think, I do tend to always have some sort of Spotify playlist creation constantly on in the background if I'm doing anything remotely creative. Lo-fi is definitely a big part as well.
What kind of music do you tend to curate for your creative sessions? Because briefly we talked about this before the podcast, but you tend to create character playlists.
Yeah, it's only a recent thing that I've started doing, but it does sort of help. I have a playlist for Kaelin, my wizard, and the idea is, if Kaelin existed in the real world, what would she listen to?
Right.
And it helps me understand her mind better. Just thinking like, oh, what kind of music would she like? And the Oh Hellos feature as the first track on that playlist.
The reason this is relevant is because I am wearing my Oh Hellos anniversary t-shirt.
Yep.
Because I am a huge Oh Hellos fan. I have all of the albums. If I could, I would have bought the physical CDs and they would be my car tracks for sure, because the Oh Hellos make me very emotional. There are some songs where I'm like, and I'm crying!
Oops, there I go, my tear duct.
But what's the song for the Oh Hellos for Kaelin?
I believe it's Soldier Poet King. And I think there's another one. There is another one. I can't quite recall which one it is.
There will come a soldier whose weapon is his word. He will tear your city down. Ole, ole, oh Lord. So the reason I love that song is honestly because D&D, but it was an animatic on YouTube for ages.
The way that I discovered it, it went super crazy viral on TikTok.
It's a good song.
It is. You just reminded me as well. I foolishly agreed that when we hit 1,000 followers on Quest Junkies Twitch, that I would record a full-length D&D rap.
Haven't you already done one of those, though?
I did a brief one for TikTok, and that's where it came from.
My favorite part is that sound beat ended up becoming Witch by Devin Cole.
Which is an incredible song, and he's also on my Kaelin playlist.
In terms of music you listen to, do you listen to anything else while you're working, or is it mainly those?
It depends on how I'm feeling. Like, every day is different. I think because majority of my adult life being a professional musician, I have an incredibly varied taste in music. Like, at the moment, I've been listening to a lot of classic rock.
Good stuff.
So that's kind of my current vibe. And then, you know, next week it might be drum and bass. And then the week after it might shift back to lo-fi.
When you were a musician, what kind of music did you do?
So the last project that I did, I was a drummer in an 8-piece symphonic metal band.
That sounds dope.
It was wildly different to anything I'd done before, but it was real fun. Because the majority of my career, I was a acoustic singer-songwriter.
So that was kind of your first step into percussion kind of thing?
Yeah, it's something, because I'd always wanted to be a drummer, but wasn't allowed a drum kit growing up. Fair. So I had to wait till I was an adult and not at home to be able to get one.
Also, now they have drum kits that you can plug yourself into to listen to, as opposed to everyone can hear you for miles, right?
Yeah, but there's no fun in that. You need everyone to be able to hear you.
Remind me not to be your bottom stairs neighbor. You ready for your next question?
Yeah.
Roll it.
Let's roll the dice. There's a three.
Three. Okay, hang on. This is one I specially made for this one. If you could describe your campaign as a muffin, what flavor would it be?
Oh, my days.
Good question, I know.
I'll tell you what. I will answer this, and I will have a combination of flavors, one for each character.
Ooh, okay. Let's go.
So for our Graviturgy wizard, Bob, we have Snozberry.
Snozberry!
Because Bob is a fine curator of Snozberry fruit leather.
Yes, that's true.
Which is, again, an awesome thing that Kyle, the player, has brought into it.
Nice.
For Reese, I'm going to say strawberry because the muffin that he got stolen that he never got back was a strawberry muffin. And it's also something that I would love to make sometimes. I've never had a strawberry muffin before. It intrigues me.
I have 3 punnets of strawberries in my fridge right now because they're currently $2 a punnet, which is very cheap in Australia for a punnet of strawberries.
Amazing. For Connell, our Earth Genasi fighter, I am going to say rock candy because he's a rock guy. Mm.
See, like, my brain immediately went to something like cardamom or cinnamon because he's a bit spicy.
That's true. Very true. For Feronia, what's the most chaotic thing you could flavor a muffin to?
You put, oh gosh, you get those jelly beans are with all of the different flavors and you just shove that in a No! Pop Rocks.
I was going to say the like Bertie Bott's every flavor beans mixed with popping candy.
We're on the same wavelength, yeah.
I think that's that would work. And then for Frike, our Shadokai monk, I'd say dark chocolate.
Mm. What kind of percentage?
High percentage. She's of the Shadowfell.
Like 97?
So, yeah, at least.
Nice.
Have I got everyone? I feel, oh, did I get everyone?
What about you? What are you?
What am I?
Who are you? It's a flavor in a muffin.
I think for me, my go-to muffin is a triple chocolate. Mm. But since we've already mentioned chocolate, I'll go with salted caramel.
Nice.
Because when my players outthink me, I can be a salty
I like being outmaneuvered. But I'm not going to lie. I asked briefly earlier, like, what you thought your good DM, your best DM skill was. I think mine's atmosphere. I love instilling fear into people. Like, it sounds like such a horrible thing, but I'm usually fairly lighthearted. Like, I'm bouncy, go, go, go. But Patch knows this. I like manipulating a situation to make it, you go from immediately from go, go, go to, yeah, by the way.
I mean, I do that a lot myself. Like,
yeah.
My players have discovered recently, we can go from 1 minute to having a good laugh fighting some random siren on a ship to then
emotional beats.
Yeah, straight to the ship crashing and everyone being depressed, and then back to the fun stuff, and then emotional lore drops back and forth.
The crying.
But one thing that I do as a DM, and I do enjoy doing it, and I would say is a fun tip if you want to be slightly cruel, but in a fun way as a DM.
Yep, what's your cruelty strat?
I will sometimes message my players outside of sessions and say something like, can you just make me a quick wisdom saving throw?
Oh, that's nice and mean.
And then they'll give me the result and I'll say, okay, cheers. And I let them know that this is something that I do. Sometimes it's just because I'm curious what the role is.
Right.
Sometimes there is a reason for it. Mm. I'm not going to tell you which is.
Yes, I love that. I definitely think that, for me, cruelty lies more in the letting the players hang themselves. Ultimately, a tabletop RPG is a game with consequences, right?
Yeah.
It's a really great way to teach your players that things have consequences and that things have like long-lasting effects, right, that they do, as it happens in real life.
Yeah.
Where if a player has made a very bad decision, and it's just straight up bad, it's in character,
yeah,
but it's bad. It's very important for them to learn that lesson as a character. And it can feel really cruel to do. I joke about being like, haha, I like my Eldritch Horror and stuff. But a lot of my Eldritch Horror I use as a way to kind of mirror characters. Like, I prefer to give characters, like, this is what you could be.
Yeah.
If you go down the wrong path. And there was this catharsis that can only happen when something is consequence. If you're worried that you're going to be causing some damage to someone. One of the good things, and you have to remind your players of this sometimes, is that Dungeons & Dragons is a game that feels very real.
Yeah.
One of the best things you can do is, like, it gives you a safe space to explore some fairly dark topics or some emotional topics that have consequences.
I think I've used curiosity brings consequence as a quote in pretty much everything I've ever done in D&D. It's a quote, I don't even remember where it came from, or even if I came up with it, I'm not sure, but it's just stuck with me for years now.
Because there's a lot of times when as a GM you're finding out with your players, right? Like, you don't know where it's going. You don't control people. Like, that's my favorite part about not railroading that much. Or making my players think that they're not railroaded. The reality is they are, but they don't know that yet.
Well, it's like in the recent events in Rodania, the crew were making a cocktail. that had an essence of wild magic about it, and ended up crashing the ship and nearly murdering the entire crew. And that hit them hard, because that was the first instance they'd had in the campaign of
true consequence.
Oh, it's not all memes and muffins. Right. There are consequences.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, for sure. All right, last question.
Last roll is a 10.
Da, 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 da. You get the average question. So the average question is, what does an average day look like for one of your NPCs?
Ooh, a particular one or just a general Rodanian?
You can pick a general Rodanian if you'd like, or if you'd like to explore a day in the life of one of your NPCs, go nuts.
Okay. I think, because I know my players are going to listen to this and they're going to hang on to every single word, I know who they want me to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
They want a day in the life of Brim, because he is the newest and most dearest. Mm-hmm. So, a day in the life of Brim Smallboy, that is his full name now, that has been canonically established, and that is spelled S-M-O-L-B-O-I. So, Brim wakes up and spends a good half an hour to 45 minutes trying to get food out of the upper side of his beak. He has a habit of getting things stuck in his beak, particularly fruit leather, but you have to watch the show to
understand.
Get context for that. Yep. And then over the course of the next several hours, he walks his way into the village and picks up odd jobs, tries to help out around the town, whatever he can do.
Mm.
Brim has a bit of self-esteem issues, so he refers to himself as the village idiot, but no one else in the village does.
Mm.
Everyone in the village really loves him, but he just assumes he's the village idiot because he doesn't have the biggest intelligence, but he does have a big heart.
Mm.
So after a few hours of that, he'll spend some time in the meditation pool. He's not really sure what it is. It's a big white round thing to him that's wet and kind of relaxing. So he spends a bit of time in there, might have a bit of a nap. Then he'll go and forage for some food. And I imagine he closes out his day ranting to some of the other villagers about all the events that had happened to him that day.
Mm.
Even if there weren't any, he'd probably make some up.
Genuine question. How much of yourself do you put into your NPCs?
Ooh, that's an interesting question. I don't think I've ever thought about that before. I think there's certainly elements of myself that I put into NPCs.
Mm.
A lot of them do tend to be inspired from other places. Like, for example, a recent NPC was brought in and was essentially the main character from The Boys.
Oh, I don't remember.
Carl Urban's character.
Mm.
Basically, it's him.
Mm.
So, for context, a really cockney guy looking to start fights and cause trouble. But then he got immediately humbled by the group. So ended up being apologetic and ended up acting quite a bit more like me, actually, when I realised that I've messed something up and go to apologise to someone.
Mm.
But yeah, I think there's definitely elements of myself that I put into NPCs. I've not thought about that before. That's an interesting thing to ponder. I will think more on this.
Well, while you think more on this, for those who have been listening with keen ears and even keener perception checks, where can we find you?
You can find me on most social media platforms under Quest Junkies UK. So Facebook, Twitter, not Instagram, actually. That's the only one that's not. TikTok, Twitch, obviously, where we have our main show. We also have a YouTube channel where the VODs go up.
It's very useful for people who have time zones.
Absolutely. We also have a Discord where the community can all get together and be on top of the latest announcements and hear about the exciting projects that are coming up, some of which are coming up very, very soon, actually, that I'm very excited about.
Dun, dun, dun. Oh, that's so exciting. Is there anything that you'd like to close up with? Any inspiring words?
Inspiring words. I think it's probably safe to say that entering this little community of D&D and telling all these stories has been nothing short of a life-changing experience for me, and it's genuinely made me a better person. Any success that I've achieved or I've yet to achieve is down to you and everyone else that's been here from the beginning, so my inspiring words are that I love you guys.
Aww. Thank you so much for coming on to the podcast, Patch.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode of Loremakers. Want to keep up with the podcast? Follow the Twitter at MakersLore or join the Discord where you can find news, future guest announcements, and get your questions featured on our next session. If you enjoyed the show, consider rating and leaving a review on your preferred podcast platform. Or you can tweet us your favorite muffin flavor so I know you were listening. And if you really enjoyed the show, we now have a Ko-fi Campfire Club. So if you'd like to join that, you can have your name shouted out to the universe because you're brighter than a star. Lots of love your way, my friends. See you around our campfire. Bye-bye.